Well, I think one thing that, you know, I go back to the discussion of the people that were here earlier was the idea of how to change. We face enormous difficulties, as you talked about, in the regulatory system. And I think Hong Kong, as Mr. Ho was pointing out, is losing its ability to move things forward as smoothly as it has in the past. Possibly with this global financial crisis, there might be some silver lining in it, that a lot of the large projects that were built in New York were built in times when people focused on a few essential projects rather than a scatter approach to development that we've seen in New York up till now. It's that requirement to get a bigger, larger vision that potentially with hopefully a change in Washington would lead to a broader discussion about these things, because without the regulatory change, it's going to be very difficult for us to catch up to what's happening in Asia. Mr. Ho, maybe you could also, part of this symposium is also that there are people here from Hong Kong who are facing, who need to sell what's strong about Hong Kong, because when you go to Hong Kong, so many people they tell you, oh, we don't want tall buildings anymore. There's some questioning about that, and maybe part of this was for us to reinforce and help Mr. Ho go back to Hong Kong and protect that, because we don't want you to stop building density, but also we want you to do density in a better way.
Well, I think probably it's a matter of culture. In Hong Kong, I'm born and bred in Hong Kong, and all along we have been very used to live in high-rise buildings. 50-story, even 70 stories is very common in Hong Kong. But in many parts of the world, as I talked to some of the people, they don't like living above railway stations.
Right.
And I mentioned to them that, well, we're building above railway stations. What? I really don't like living above railway station. They like living in their houses in the suburban areas. So I think it's a matter of culture. But in Hong Kong, I think although it is full of skyscrapers, as I said, it can be done in a very civilized way. It all depends on how you planned the whole complex. You know, in a complex which is all self-contained, with shopping centers, with office, with hotels, with residential apartments, one can really, you know, almost a sort of one-stop shops where you can work, you can live, you can commute, you can play within a complex. That's what Hong Kong people like, I mean, in terms of a culture.
I think that there's also the selling of density in terms of sustainability, because, you know, David's company has done more research on that, and are really the leaders in the world on engineering and planning and sustainability. But there is no choice to, well, I don't think there is a choice to living in the future in a sophisticated way without density and high rise.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people just don't realize that they're really sprawl,
yeah,
is low rise development, and of any form is not going to solve the challenges we face in terms of sustainability.
I could agree with you more, Paul. It's actually China. Many municipal governments, they come to Hong Kong and try to copy our models in the China cities. Although China is also, you know, is a very vast country, but they also begins to learn using high densities in the within the urban areas, because in Hong Kong, just for 1 kilometer or 1 mile of infrastructures, you have hundreds and thousands of people to maintain, you know, 1 mile of infrastructures, whereas in sprawling, you know, wide country, you just can't afford to maintain this kind of infrastructure.
Yeah, I'd like to add a couple of points. I think that what's happening around the world seems to be, to me, that many countries are developing on a very dense urban basis, particularly in Asia, in the Middle East. And that has been balanced by also trying to develop a large amount of urban area for people to see and people to experience when they're living in their dense or when they're living in their high-rise buildings. One of the points that was mentioned earlier is Hong Kong has been very successful by essentially growing, by expanding itself, by putting new infrastructure in the sea around Hong Kong, making itself more urban and applying new principles. And I think that there is certainly a lesson to be learned from that for New York, but there are theories of bureaucratic sort of issues. I mean, New York seems to need both more high-rise buildings and it needs more open space. Now, whether or not an expansion into the surrounding area surrounding Manhattan would actually help to achieve that, I don't know, but it needs something.
So I was very interested in Paul's comments, because in Hong Kong, MTR had a lucky streak of being able to develop all the properties in no man's land, new reclamation. And I'm somewhat envious of the system in New York, where communities can protect themselves from these kind of developments with proper planning laws. They've maybe gone overboard, but I'm jealous of your systems because we don't have that kind of protection in Hong Kong. Now, in Japan, I saw that you have built in an existing environment in a city, right, this big tower. And I believe what you didn't show there was the interface at street level, right, and how your building interfaces with the area around it, which is where I think Hong Kong has missed many opportunities because they never had that pressure. And if New York would understand how you've done that in Japan, right, they may not have such problems with you doing that here in New York City. Yeah. But so I think focusing on that street level interface and how you interface with the community, that is a discussion I think it would be good to have.
Yeah, I think what I was going to address in talking about Hong Kong was exactly that balance between, and I was going to show how Hong Kong had developed, let's say, the density as the mountain meets the water, and the very sensitive development that happened over a number of years of stitching together landscape and towers in a very wonderful way. And when it got to these large developments on the water's edge, I do feel many people in Hong Kong, like yourself, have an ambiguous response that, on the one hand, they're tremendously appealing and attract many people and many users and are enormously successful commercially. But the next step is that the development around them hasn't yet matured. And that's a very important next step that I know that the MTR was planning to do with the Kowloon West development cultural area, that the real test of the success of Kowloon Station is going to be in the next 20 years. It's too early to judge it. It's not even finished. So the cities get built over a number of years, maybe a number of decades. And the bigger the intervention, the longer it takes to fully absorb it. Certainly what we saw here with Battery Park City was very similar. Today, when you go down to Battery Park City, the skyscraper museum, you'll see it is seamless with the streets. But it wasn't always the case. It took a number of decades to be fully integrated into the city.
Yeah.